I had someone just told me the other day, there's a gentleman who says he goes to the grocery store and walks the aisles in hopes that someone talks to him.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year and welcome back. We hope you all had a wonderful holiday season, and we're glad that you're joining us as we kick off 2018. This episode features my conversation with Maureen Feldman of the Motion Picture and Television Fund. We discuss the unseen epidemic of social isolation and loneliness, and what the community is doing to combat it. Hope you enjoy, and as always, please give us a like and a comment on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you enjoy podcasts. Thanks again. So, Maureen, as we like to do to start each episode, can you tell the audience something that people might not know about you, maybe something outside of work?
Let's see. Outside of work, I think I'm basically a storyteller. I like to make short videos about mostly intergenerational issues, and that's my creative outlet.
Oh, excellent. And you were telling me just before we started, you did a little bit of voiceover work in the past.
I did.
So you're familiar with recording?
Yes, I did many, many commercials over the last 20 years.
Oh, excellent. Okay, so moving on a little bit, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up here at Motion Picture?
Sure. Well, I started out originally in the wellness industry, health, fitness, wellness, anything that had to do with positive aging. And I did that for several years, working in health clubs, building health clubs, designing programs. And then I met my husband, who was in the arts and entertainment industry, and I ended up working doing music for commercials as an executive producer. And I did that for several years, and that's how I got into the voiceover work as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What originally got you into the health and wellness part of aging?
Well, I came from a family that I didn't think was, particularly active in the health field, and I wanted to be healthier and have a long, healthy life. So I started studying it and working out at a health club and thought, I can do this.
Yeah.
So I decided to get a job there, and it just opened a world to me to, accountability and being able to change your outcome if you had a family that maybe had a history of diabetes, as I did.
Yeah.
I wanted to make sure that I didn't fall victim to that. So learning about it was the first approach.
Yeah. And we've actually recorded here at Motion Picture Television Fund in the past. We had Dr. Kaiser on to for the 95th anniversary. Can you remind the audience a little bit about the Motion Picture and Television Fund? What is it? How or who is eligible to be a member, kind of the mission of Motion Picture?
Great. Yeah, sure. The Motion Picture Television Fund, which MPTF, we support our entertainment community in living and aging well with dignity and purpose and in helping each other in times of need. So that pretty much encompasses a lot of people. I think often when people think of the MPTF, they think of the celebrities and
right.
people they can identify and know. But
it's off of Spielberg Drive.
Exactly. And if you see a movie, all that roster of names that goes on for 15 minutes after the movie is over, all of those people are part of MPTF. Carpenters, drivers, set builders, lighting, grips, makeup, hair, everything. So caterers, tutors. They are all part of MPTF. So we serve that whole greater community in many ways. We have programs to help with health and financial, emotional. It's a pretty deep organization. We have many, many programs here.
Yeah. And what brought you here to MPTF?
It is this program, the Daily Call Sheet, the Social Isolation Impact Project. As I left the entertainment industry and I started teaching older adults health and fitness, and I went back and got my master's degree in media communication psychology, so the whole psychology of how we communicate. And it made me recognize how the older generation was being marginalized by not understanding new 21st century communication tools. They didn't know how to text. They didn't understand what Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, none of those tools were really available to them because they had closed off to it. At least my students, I was teaching at Los Angeles Pierce College. So I created a curriculum called Stay Connected, Communicating in the 21st Century. And that led me to discover social isolation and loneliness and the impact that it has on someone's health, especially as they age. And this program, Dr. Scott Kaiser, wanted to start a program here that addressed that issue.
Yeah.
And we got put together, and he and I started talking, and I just knew this was a project I wanted to take on with my whole heart.
Yeah. And so that's a great segue. We've covered some of the really mind-blowing statistics regarding the aging population and how much it's growing and how rapidly it's growing. What are some challenges that the rapid increase of older adults creates for social isolation and loneliness, just kind of on a larger scale before we jump in?
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it, because the baby boomer generation particularly, which they started retiring, turning 65 in around 2011, mm-hmm. and there are 79 million of them.
Right.
So I think it'll go all the way to 2029.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of people. The generation behind them isn't that big.
Right.
So there's going to be a pressure on the healthcare system in just sheer numbers of nurses, doctors, healthcare workers, social workers. There won't be as many as there are,
right.
Retirees. So that's just number one. And that generation had a very high rate of divorce.
Mm-hmm.
They had fewer children. Some of them had no children. And so those things alone put someone at risk for being socially isolated.
Right. And that's an interesting thought that I hadn't even necessarily considered. When you and I were preparing for this episode, working in the senior care industry myself, you see a lot of people that are either still with a spouse or that the divorce rates weren't that high, and that the prevalence of divorce in the baby boomer generation, I think, is, the statistics are around 50% mm-hmm. or something like that.
I think it's 52%.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And it's an interesting thought that family caregiving kind of nucleus that was there in the generation that's aging now is not necessarily such a safeguard in this upcoming generation. To put a more finite idea on it, can you give us some statistics around social isolation and loneliness in the aging population right now?
Yeah, well, according to an AARP study, it was on loneliness, something like 42 million people admittedly wrote in that they suffered from chronic loneliness. That's
yeah.
a lot of people. In California alone, we have one of the largest aging populations around, and we are having more and more people move here every year. So just in California alone, I think it's something like 12% of the population.
Wow.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And when you live in California and you have transportation issues, as many of our aging adults will
right.
have, we don't have the public transportation set up to address that.
Right.
So if you don't drive in Los Angeles, and if you don't have family or friends that can pick you up and take you places,
right.
you are by nature socially isolated.
Yeah. And with Los Angeles being the way that it is, having family and friends around could even mean, or not having family and friends around could even mean that they live across town somewhere that they can't easily that they're not easily accessible to you.
Exactly. And on top of the most recent recession, 2008, many of our traditionalists, our older, population right now that are retiring or retired or disabled, those grown children are in their 40s, 50s, and even 60s still working and
right.
raising kids and have college kids. So it doesn't mean they are across the street, like you said, who can run and take them to doctor's appointments or grocery shopping.
Right.
So if they live in town, as you said, in Los Angeles, that doesn't mean much. Traffic.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's intense.
And before we move forward, you mentioned chronic loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
What, just so the audience has an idea, what does that mean?
Well, that's a good question, too. So there's socially isolated. That means you are socially isolated.
Yeah.
You don't have family and friends. You don't have interactions with people regularly. You don't have support. So that's a very clear-cut description. Loneliness is different. It's a perceived feeling. You can be surrounded by people and still feel very lonely. People can live in senior, facilities, homes, senior living situations, but not know anyone and not have the personality
yeah.
or ability to reach out. So being lonely is a perceived feeling. It's quality.
Yeah.
Sometimes
through your coalition, I met Ariel at the Milken Institute, mm-hmm. and she and I were talking. And one of the interesting statistics that she had mentioned was that part of the thing that plays into the loneliness is that actually the polls of the aging population say that while they enjoy hanging out with people their own age, they would actually almost in a lot of cases rather be hanging out with people from different generations and different backgrounds. And so I would imagine that what you talked about, even the perceived loneliness, that that can play into it quite a bit sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people, for example, if you did something your whole life, you were in healthcare and then you were put in a group with no one knew anything about that, you feel almost like the new kid in the high school.
Right.
It's very difficult at any age to go and start all over, particularly if you're struggling with a chronic disease or a disability. I mean, I don't know if we change that much as we age as far as our own sense of self.
Sure, sure. And nobody ever thinks that they're the aging population either. There's always something older that's the old people, quote unquote.
Especially with the baby boomer generation, they are one of the first generations who just don't perceive themselves as old. They just
right.
never thought they would get older. At least that's from polls and surveys that were taken. So they get extra annoyed when they have a disability or a diagnosis that makes it so they can't socialize, get out, work.
Right. And so when I was at your coalition, one of the things that really jumped out at me, and I would imagine that most people don't really perceive this when they're thinking about this challenge of social isolation and loneliness, is the actual physical health effects that it has on people. Can you share some of those with the audience? Because that was really eye-opening to me.
Yes. Yeah. So there have been a lot of research studies that have been, you know, for quite a long time, and they're just now starting to be released. I think, you know, it's been for a while, but mm-hmm. we're I think, getting a lot more attention from the general public. But the studies have shown that if you are experiencing social isolation and loneliness, your health risk factors go way up, equivalent to someone who has heart disease or obesity. And the most, you know, shocking that gets everyone's attention is equivalent to smoking 15 cigarettes a day.
Wow.
So if you're lonely or you perceive yourself as lonely and you're socially isolated, you can have the same negative health risk factors as someone who is suffering obesity and smoking.
Yeah. And does some of that play into that when you are feeling lonely or feeling depressed, that you are also less active or and your mind is less active? Does that all play into the actual physical manifestation of loneliness in the body?
It does. Quite a bit. So it's a couple of different things. When you are socially active, you actually have hits of dopamine. You interactions, social connections make us feel good.
Right.
And that improves our immune system. It improves our attitude, which we know when you're dealing with any kind of disease or difficulty, attitude is a big part of it. So if you're isolated and alone and you don't have that, you can start to fall into depression. You don't eat as well. You might fall into some unhealthy behaviors, maybe staying up late at night and not cooking for yourself and eating bad foods, maybe a reliance on pain medication, even if it's over-the-counter pain medication.
Sure.
So those kind of behaviors tend to, you know, get worse if you don't have any kind of social interactions. So
yeah.
There's that part for sure.
Are those some of the early warning signs that people might see in a family member or in a neighbor or things like that? Are some of those physical changes or, like you said, you know, not cooking for themselves or not going out as much, are those some of the earlier warning signs that people notice when someone's suffering from this social isolation or loneliness?
Absolutely. If it was my mother or of my family member and I noticed that they had stopped cooking or, you know, and if they had the ability to
right,
cook for themselves
right.
and just decided they didn't care anymore, or maybe getting up and getting dressed, those are definite signs, any kind of behavioral sign like that. And, you know, one of the things I would ask my mother or family member every day would be, have you talked to anyone today? Do you know your neighbors? Or I would try to encourage them to get connected socially, because I think having extra sets of eyes and conversations does keep the person who's experiencing it more present.
Yeah. And so that brings this whole idea of social isolation and loneliness from not just being a social issue to being also a healthcare issue. So what are some of the major impacts that this problem is going to have on both public health and personal health in the healthcare system?
Well, for starters, some of the research has indicated that those that are socially isolated and lonely will have higher incidences of using ERs. They will have higher hospital readmission rates. So if you are hospitalized and then you're sent home with, you know, care instructions, if you're alone, you often don't follow them. Yeah. Or maybe when you were released from the hospital, you weren't clear on what they were. So really following with the medications and the instructions that the doctors left you, you may not be following them. Also, higher incidences, like I said, of pain medication, not taking care of themselves physically, whether that's eating or exercising. And they will probably require more long-term care.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. And with the rehospitalizations and emergency department visits, you had mentioned something when we were preparing for this episode, but that actually, while some of those are from health issues that come up, that also part of that some people have admitted is that if they go to the ER or if they go to the hospital, that they're around people again. Is that a real issue that comes up?
That's starting to be discussed. Yes, that some people actually use their doctor's visits and ER visits to have socialization. They want to talk to people if they're feeling sick or having pain. If they have social action and interaction in their life, they can talk about that with them. Right. Sometimes it's basically having someone see our humanity. You want to say, I don't feel good. I'm not feeling right. And it might not be something super serious, but having someone to talk to about sends them to an ER sometimes.
Yeah.
Someone just told me the other day, there's a gentleman who says he goes to the grocery store and walks the aisles in hopes that someone talks to him.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, and without getting too far off topic, because we're going to dive into your program a little bit more, but what in an immediate sense do you say to someone that tells you that, or do you try to initiate to help someone that tells you something like that?
Well, that does get pretty heavy into our program because it just is. So yeah. I can't make it go away.
Right.
But what I try to do through the program that we offer is to let them know, hey, you're not alone. This happens to many people young, much younger than you, disabled people who are newly retired, or maybe they lost a job. It doesn't take a lot to send someone down the spiral of depression or despair. So we try to let them know that there are ways and things to do, and it's never too late to get connected or reconnected.
Sure. This challenge of social isolation and loneliness and some of the statistics that you told us a little bit earlier, will it be a public health epidemic if it's not addressed soon? Is it of that kind of magnitude if it's not already there?
Yes. First of all, I think it probably is more there than we are aware of, but it will grow and get bigger as we continue to have this large cohort of people retiring that, you know, chronic disease and things like that are just going to happen. So as you get a diagnosis or you lose your driver's license or you lose a spouse or a partner, those are the people that I'm worried about. They don't have especially after this last recession, a lot of people lost a lot of savings and they're not really set up for long-term care. Facilities are expensive and caregivers are expensive.
Yeah.
So if you don't have a family or resources for that and you're not socially connected, those are the people that I think are going to create or have the most difficulty. And as far as the healthcare system goes, then we talk about more instances of diabetes, high blood pressure, depression, anxiety, and all those combined will put pressure on the healthcare system.
Yeah.
Not to mention, you know, people dying alone.
Yeah.
You know, and that happens.
Sure. We talked about your coalition. I do want to go ahead and get into that. Can you, one, remind the audience of the name of the program and the coalition, and then what is the overall goal? What is your mission for it, and what is the goal of the coalition?
Great. So when I started this job here at the Motion Picture Television Fund, MPTF, my project is called The Daily Call Sheet. But the next aspect, another component of my job, is a coalition, and it is called Social Isolation and Loneliness Impact Coalition. And what I did was invite several other agencies who serve the aging population. So this is all over Los Angeles. We're new, so we're just building.
Right.
And we got decision makers, executive directors, people who are in charge, to come together to talk about what programs we currently are offering that address social isolation and loneliness. So some people may not have a program specifically towards that, but they might deliver Meals on Wheels or food or other services where they have contact with people. And in one way or another, they are addressing the isolation and the loneliness issue.
Right.
So we're coming together to work together, to share best practices, to understand what each other does so that we can collaborate. So if I have clients that might benefit from your program, or you might have clients that you can't help, but my program can help. So we're working together with the goal of reducing the incidences of social isolation and loneliness in the greater Los Angeles area.
Yeah.
And really to get the word out.
Yeah.
People don't understand if children and the children of aging adults start understanding how important this is. Maybe they can start earlier at helping their loved one connect, get connected with senior centers, services in their area, help them meet neighbors. You know, just opening and expanding those social networks before it becomes crisis.
Yeah. What are some of the other organizations that you've drawn upon to be a part of this coalition?
So we have fabulous agencies involved. One Generation is involved, fabulous senior center. Tarzana, or Providence Tarzana, has a fabulous peer-to-peer program where they go visiting. We've got the Jewish Family Services. Front Porch, Wise and Healthy Aging. I have so many on the list. I don't want to leave anyone out, but we have Senior Center Without Walls, Partners in Care.
Right.
Of course, you read the Milken Institute, right, for the Center of the Future of Aging. The Los Angeles LGBTQ Center in Hollywood, that is one group that often suffers social isolation and loneliness as they age.
Right.
Because they might have got disconnected from their family very early on.
Sure, sure.
So, aging issues are very important to them as well. We have Alzheimer's Greater LA. We have UCLA has some people involved with us. CareMore, Valley Interfaith Council, and the High Village over in Culver City. I think that's where they're located. So I think we have about 21 to 23 agencies so far that have participated and said they want to continue, as well as the Los Angeles Department of Aging, and a couple of their organizations are sending representatives to participate as well. So we're trying to work with the city and the county and be very inclusive.
Right. And some of the, statistics surrounding this public health issue can be depressing when people really realize it for the first time. But I do want this episode to have a high note, because part of the reason that we're here is that a lot of your organization here at MPTF and some of the other organizations are doing a lot of really great work. So can you explain to us, one, the Daily Call Sheet program that you do, and then maybe highlight some of the other programs that some of these organizations are providing around social isolation?
Absolutely. So that is one of our main focuses with the coalition, is to educate each other and to expand what we are doing and improve. My program here at MPTF is called the Daily Call Sheet, and we're leveraging the kindness and the time of our volunteers. We happen to be an organization that has a very active volunteer group, and we recruit, train, support, and supervise them in making regular social phone calls to our industry members. So our industry is huge. As I had mentioned,
right,
we've got lots and lots of people, many retirees, and so they're reaching out and making social calls to them on a regular basis. We try to match them to interests if we can. So if you were a makeup artist or you were a cameraman, sometimes we match. Some of them were in World War II. Some like fishing, love books, animals, whatever that is. But so they are having ongoing social conversations from someone within an industry that they loved and trusted in one way or another.
Yeah.
We're calling also the spouses and family members. So, for example, you might be the industry member and you're only 30 or 40, but your parents are also eligible.
Sure.
So through these, they build friendships and connections with these volunteers. And so it's one more person that's giving them a call a couple of times a week. And through that, that volunteer can report back. If that person has, you know, transportation issues, we try to help them find ways to get around using GoGo Grandparent or Access, you know, some kind of transportation. Or if they are having food insecurity issues, we can connect them to the Meals on Wheels programs or other nutrition programs. So in a way, we're trying to be like a community navigator.
Yeah.
What happens as people age, they often don't know there are services there for them.
Right, right.
So if we can open that up and let them know and help them, you know, navigate that a little bit, then we're helping them connect to other services available to them.
Do you find, just really quickly as an aside, do you find that a lot of the calls are just the call itself is enough? Or do you find that on a majority of the calls, you're also connecting them to some of those other services?
No, mostly it's just the call.
Yeah.
Mostly it's just the call. And especially calling the older generation, so not even the baby boomer generation. We call these the traditionalists. They're very kind and sweet and have a lot of dignity, and they don't want any kind of charity. So it's very important we don't treat it like that. This is more like an alumni association. You are part of this industry. We want to keep you connected. We want to connect with you and hear about your stories. Some of them have fabulous stories of life, you know, when they were younger, whether it was in the industry, the war, raising kids. And it's a great way to share information and from generation to generation, and to just keep them, their mind active and their heart, knowing that people care about them.
Sure, sure. What about some of the other groups that that are involved that might be, that might have programs for people, whether they're in the industry or outside of the industry? Mm-hmm. What are some of the other programs that they're running?
That's great. So part of our coalition, One Generation has a fabulous senior center where they have activities. Most of their activities are at the center. So if the individual can get to the center, they have an adult daycare.
Sure.
They have, I think, games and food and social activities that are there. But they also do a meal delivery program as well. So they serve people that way. And I do believe they make some phone calls as well. I think their calls are made from their facility by some of the social workers. Tarzana's program, Providence, they have a senior peer-to-peer. So it's, I don't know how large it is, but they actually do some visits. I think the visits are probably once a month. So that'll be kind of like a friendly visitor that will actually pop in and talk with them.
Is a lot of are a lot of the efforts around phone calls, or is because of the reliance on volunteers for a lot of the programs or grants for a lot of the programs, are a lot of them trying to draw people out of their homes?
Both. So that's a great question, by the way. So a part of the coalition is to really examine what's out there and all the different programs and how we as organizations can afford to do these kind of programs.
Right.
Create sustainability. We don't want to start something that we can't keep going. That's why leveraging, you know, the energy and enthusiasm of volunteers is really helpful, because it's something that'll allow us to add to what we're already doing.
Right.
But yes, if someone is already disabled, then the phone calls are pretty much the only way, unless they have access to get out. But many of the people, I have 94-year-olds that we're connecting with. But if they are able and have a desire to get out, we love to connect them to senior centers and organizations that have lunches or have gatherings and social opportunities for them to actually be in the presence of others.
Yeah.
But the calls do, I mean, the calls are ongoing and all the time. It's a very low cost, high touch way to stay connected with someone. And that's part of the coalition, is to help teach other organizations how to implement something like this if they've not got someone there to operate and run it.
Yeah. And can you share any, like, from even just in your program, some success stories that you had? Maybe even you had told me one that really stuck out to me, that there was one person that you were calling that never answered the phone calls.
Yeah.
And so can you tell us some success stories?
Yeah, so we started out, there was one gentleman who originally said yes, he'd like calls. He had said that he lived alone. He was never married. He had a neighbor who was his emergency contact. And we talked to him maybe for a month or so. He had a volunteer and then just stopped answering the phone calls, just wasn't answering. And the volunteer was friendly and chipper and would always leave a nice message to say, I'm just trying to reach you, thinking about you. And finally, the volunteers called and said, I don't think he wants to talk. He never answers the phone. So we found out from his emergency contact that he was just too ill to talk. He just didn't have the energy. But when asked if he wanted to discontinue the calls, he said, oh, no, please keep calling. I love getting those messages. I love to hear that they're thinking about me.
Yeah.
Which was very sweet. We would have thought, oh, they're just not interested. But
yeah.
They kept. But one story I wanted to tell you about was a gentleman, and I'll just call him, you know, John Doe.
Sure.
He's in his 80s. He is eyesight impaired. He's divorced. He is an ex-alcoholic. He's had a challenging life, mm-hmm. and he had been estranged from his grown daughter for 40 years. And so he had no friends, family. He didn't even put down anything for an emergency contact when we originally connected with him. And through talking to the volunteer, it took a few months. She said, why don't you call your daughter? Because he's getting on in age and he was feeling very vulnerable. And she said, you know, there's no time like the present. And he responded saying, there's no time at all.
Yeah.
And within 2 weeks, he called his daughter and she flew out and reconnected with him after 40 years and brought two grandchildren he had never met.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's an ongoing process. They're still working it out.
Yeah.
She wants him to text her. He doesn't know how to text,
right.
So that's another issue. But, you know, I don't think he would have had the courage to do that or even thought about it had that volunteer not regularly, you know, asking and learning about his history and letting him know it's okay, it's never too late,
yeah.
You know.
That's a pretty exceptional step for a volunteer and impact for a volunteer to take. How do they have to have any specific background or do they get training before they start calling people? How do you prepare people for what they're about to encounter and the unknown of what they're about to?
No, that's also a very good question because this, I think, happened out of the fact that they had been talking for a few months and became friends in a way. And yes, the volunteers do go through training. They're trained on all aspects of, you know, privacy issues and respect and confidentiality, as well as how to be good listeners, patient and kind. Many of the people we're calling might be hearing impaired or, you know, be struggling with something. But they also receive a lot of ongoing support and training, and they have access to us immediately if they have any issues. But I really think that we look for volunteers that are kind, considerate, open, and very understanding. Most of our volunteers are older themselves.
Right.
So they understand. They themselves are aging. Maybe they're not quite as old as the people they're calling, but they understand what it's like to have lived a little bit for the most part. And I think that this particular volunteer that he was talking to, you know, had her own challenges so she could relate to him on many levels. And that's where a good match comes from also.
Right. It also gives the volunteers a sense of purpose as they're aging in their own lives because there are just statistics everywhere about how volunteerism and that intrinsic sense of purpose can really help to combat some of these things.
Absolutely. We do have a lot of younger volunteers who are enjoying and interacting with these older members of our community, and they enjoy that quite a bit. But I think you're right. It is the older volunteers that get a great sense of personal connection, value, purpose. They wake up and know that they're doing something of value, and they admittedly say, I get as much out of this as I'm giving, if not more.
Yeah. That's excellent. Well, one thing before we wrap up here, on this podcast, we like to talk a lot about technology and how technology is impacting the way that people age or just healthcare in general, not always the aging population, just healthcare in general. But you actually have a very specific insight into this. You teach a class for older adults on technology. So first, can you tell us a little bit about the class?
Sure. So I teach at Los Angeles Pierce College in the Older Adult Education Department, which is called Encore. And I'm an adjunct professor there. And I started out actually teaching health classes quite a while ago, balance and just anything having to do with healthy living. And I noticed that most of my students had flip phones. And, you know, as I had teenagers at the time and was asking them, what will you do when they don't make those anymore? And they had no idea that that was even a possibility.
Right.
And I realized none of them had interests in smartphones. They liked their dumb phone is what they called it. And they didn't really know what any of the current platforms were like, Twitter, Facebook. Yeah. Not, you know, there were a few, but the majority didn't care and didn't know. And nor did they know how to use swipe screen technology, which we knew in healthcare and even booking, buying movie tickets and at airports. That was a very important skill to learn.
Yeah.
So I wrote a curriculum called Stay Connected, Communicating in the 21st Century. It's a 15-week, 30-hour class run through the state of California through Pierce College that informs them of what's going on, but also why it's important that they know and understand it. Even if they choose not to use it, they need to know what's going on, especially now when you have a president that communicates through Twitter. If you don't know what Twitter is, it just leaves them marginalized and left out. So this class covers all of that, but we have a lot of fun. They learn how to text. They learn about Facebook, FaceTime, Skyping, video chatting of all sorts. They learn how to use apps, health apps.
Sure.
And YouTube is our favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and what impacts can technology have on social isolation and loneliness specifically? Are there any technology that you're particularly excited about or anything that's having a significant impact on it currently?
Absolutely. So I wrote a paper called Combating Chronic Loneliness and Isolation Through Digital Media, or Digital Literacy, actually, and Social Media. And it's because if you do have an aging person and you don't live in town, if you can connect them and teach them how to use video chatting, you can keep an eye on them, you can check in with them daily. They can see grandkids growing up. They can see the prom dresses and the soccer outfits and the Halloween costumes. You can keep them connected if they're comfortable with that technology. But as healthcare continues to grow and we don't have the high number of social workers, those home visits may be less and less, and it will be through video chatting where you might have a digital screen in your home where all of a sudden you have an appointment with your social worker who can check in on you. Being comfortable with those technologies is important. But the entertainment and the joy that they can get. I've had students who learn to use YouTube to hear an Estonian choir from their hometown. They hadn't heard that music in 30, 40 years.
Wow.
You know, someone else using YouTube to learn how to, you know, clip their roses or crochet or... You know, once they realize that there are free resources, endless entertainment opportunities, I think it can help them, you know, with some of that loneliness and isolation.
Yeah. And so thanks again for sitting down with me. It's really been a pleasure. And so as we're kind of wrapping up here on the technology piece, are there any anecdotes or takeaways that you can share with the audience? Because, you know, this social isolation problem is scary. but I think that we're doing a pretty good job of showing that it's possible to combat it and what things are doing. Are there any particular takeaways from your class and your students and technology that you can share?
Well, I would mention to you, yes. So absolutely, if you have aging people in your life or older people in your life, connect them now. Get them to reach out, meet their neighbors, get connected. So in person is always best, in my opinion. Yeah. Neighbors, friends, old friends. But if that can't happen, if you can connect them to old high school, college friends through technology, that's where Facebook has been really great with this population. They're reconnecting and having fun and having these conversations. But we do a whole section both on text etiquette, which is, you know, you don't really want to receive several paragraphs while you're working from your parent. But teaching them to use Siri was hysterical.
Yeah.
You know, Siri, will you please help me find directions too? Or and they're so polite and nice saying please and thank you that I think that was one of the funniest and most challenging classes is to get them how to give commands as opposed to politely suggest.
Right. What does Siri say if you say please and thank you? Does she respond in kind?
She will often say, I cannot find that in the data. Yeah, sorry. You do not have that person in your contacts.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. They'll shake the phone thinking that will work. But it's a very fun and challenging class. And I do show them some videos of younger kids trying to use an old-fashioned typewriter and a rotary phone.
Right.
They cannot figure it out for the life of them.
Right.
To demonstrate that if you've never used this technology, it's unexpected that you would adapt to it so easily. And once they see that we all struggle with learning new technologies and that it's just not giving up that counts, they'll take a breath and give it another try.
Yeah. I think that's really important too, because I think that the reason that a lot of technology that's built for an aging population doesn't take off is because initially it makes people feel like they're not smart, or for some reason they're the one that doesn't get it. And instead of, they're proud people, they've lived an entire life. And instead of working through that, it's just, oh, this isn't for me. This isn't for me. And so it's interesting to see the correlation of, no, it's not just you, actually.
That's right.
Yeah, lots of people struggle with it.
You said the word frustration. We all get frustrated when we don't know how to do something like that. Yes, and I'm hoping new technologies do become easier for them. And if you, again, are thinking of setting your parents or a family member up, often they'll say no because they get frustrated. So I often suggest get an iPad, load it already with just simple – all they have to do is turn it on and off and press a button. Don't expect them to be the one that sets it up or loads it. You have to really help them and be their tech person for a while and help them breathe in it and enjoy it a little bit. Because once they enjoy it, they'll be more interested in learning how to figure it out later.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much again for sitting down with me. If people are interested in learning a little bit more about your program or about Motion Picture, where can they find more information?
So they can go to mptf.com or they can reach me directly. I give my...
Sure.
At 818-876-1190, and that's at the Motion Picture Television Fund. And we're very excited to talk about this coalition and Social Isolation Impact Project in general, because the more people recognize early, it's a prevention. We'll start taking these preventative measures so that people are more prepared and maybe call that long-lost sister or neighbor, and reconnect. It's not that hard.
Excellent. Well, hey, thanks again so much. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having this podcast.
Oh, of course.